Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at what else. There's an election in a little bit more than 5 days. But first, Wiss, I was there. There was a plea for new steps on election security in the Capitol. Mark O'Connell of the Wisconsin Counties Association laid out the challenges in this fast-paced world for county officials. Tony Evers talked about school choice. Vouchers, a program that he opposes, but a program that's grown from Milwaukee to Racine to now statewide. And finally, you're going to want to watch this. Excerpts from the most contentious Legislative Council Study Committee on the sale of alcohol. Wish I was there.
If the commission votes today to adopt the staff recommendations on agenda item G1, it would be the single most important development in election security in the nation leading up to the November elections. Remember that Wisconsin's election security has been ranked in the lower half of all 50 states, but only because of this one key missing piece. Audits are the one security measure that is effective against all the risks that might affect the vote tabulation.
Society is moving at an incredible pace. We too must adapt. We too must embrace artificial intelligence. We too must embrace technology. We too must embrace different ways to accomplish and address the challenges of the day. We too must do that. We have a room full of leaders here because county government is that fabric that holds our societies together.
Whiskerchin broke into Endy's home, created a secret nest in her bedroom closet, and used it as a hideout over the course of 2 weeks to steal valuable and treasured items to obtain money for drugs.
What we need for the voucher schools is more accountability and more transparency. In order to have a conversation around vouchers in the state of Wisconsin, we need to have people understanding what it costs them personally. I think we should be able to tell, or me as a homeowner, that this amount of money in my property taxes is going to subsidize public and private or private education. I think that's a realistic thing for us to do. Then we can have a good conversation about whether it should continue to expand or contract or whatever. Right now, we just don't have the information. I think people deserve it.
This is a very politically engaged state, and you know, it may be one reason we're politically engaged is because we're divided, and maybe one reason we're divided is because we're so politically engaged. But Wisconsin has a traditional culture of participation. I mean, we're always invariably basically number two to Minnesota in voter turnout, and in some parts of Wisconsin, more people vote in this congressional district than just about anywhere in the country. And the other district that would be close is the one in the Milwaukee suburbs.
In Wisconsin, breweries under 300,000 barrels have essentially no three-tier system. We self-distribute, we act as retailers. So this three-tier argument is not, I don't get it.
So your view is we should just go to free market alcohol?
Well, answer my question. No. If we can self-distribute and we can act as a retailer, why can't they? What's the public good from preventing them from doing so?
Because you need to have it in place for the public health and safety, for the tax collection. You are operating still. You are subject to the rules of a wholesaler when you self-distribute.
But we're not, because we don't have a wholesale permit.
No, you should be. If you read Chapter 125, you are bound by all those rules. So if you're not, that's, again, why we need an enforcer to come out and show why you're not operating under Chapter 125. That's the problem. The problem is the broken windows that exist in the system.
No surprise, GR. I want to open this show talking about ta-da-da-da, transportation funding. And so both the governor and Mr. Evers spoke to the Wisconsin Counties Conference talking about transportation. So before we take that apart, let's look at 1 minute each from Governor Walker and Mr. Evers at the Wisconsin Counties event last week in La Crosse.
We increased aid to local governments, including counties, as well as municipalities,
Got the biggest increase you all had received in about 20 years when it comes to aid to fix your roads and for many others to fix bridges and things like that along the way. But today I want to announce that in our next state budget, we will increase aid for counties for the maintenance of county highways to 30% of cost, which will be the highest level of state support since the General Transportation Aid Program for Counties was created in 1994. We're committed to working with you, not just on transportation, that's the specific announcement today, but for all the other things going forward. We want to be partners in the future as we have been strong partners in the past, and as a former county official, you have my pledge that as long as I'm your governor, we'll continue to be good partners going forward and look for new ways to partner together.
Now, the things that I focused on, frankly, are roads and infrastructure, fully funding education, making sure that our natural resources are strong going forward and that we believe in science, and address health care costs. All those things, health care, natural resources, making sure that we have a good school system, making sure that we have good roads and infrastructure, those are connected to Wisconsin values. There has been no movement on developing a comprehensive transportation policy. We have counties and municipalities across the state that are stripping the asphalt off the roads. So we're going back to gravel roads. This is a nonpartisan issue. Bringing together people, including the WCA, and developing a sound, comprehensive policy around transportation and infrastructure in the state of Wisconsin. This is an absolute necessity. We must be ready to do this. And frankly, Scott Walker's lying in the sand, notwithstanding what he told you today. He's had 8 years to correct this, and it has not happened. We're going to do this. We're going to make it bipartisan, and we're going to make it fair, and especially fair for the counties and municipalities in the state.
Let's take a deep dive into what both the governor and Mr. Evers said. First of all, the governor said, hey, counties, we've been working with you. I'm a former county executive. Let's give you $57 million more, which is a 50% increase in county road aids, which will bring the state share of county road aids to 30%. Then separately, oh, good news, we're going to open a six-mile segment of 3990 north of Janesville, and it'll open 2020, not 2021, which will give the state $70 million to apply to other major projects. So before we talked about Mr. Evers, your response to what the governor said.
No, I mean, look, there are three issues that Democrats you've seen their ads, healthcare, education, roads. There is a perceived vulnerability for Walker on roads that he's been in charge for 8 years. They haven't found a long-term solution for funding, even though Republicans have been charged the entire time that he's been in office. And we have roads that are not rated very highly. So it is a issue for him to address. Now, part of what Walker's talking about, too, is that we put a lot of money in mega projects, we call in southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The Marquette Interchange, the Zoo Interchange.
East-West, 94
north-south.
Past Foxconn. Shh.
So he's talking about not really doing more in the Milwaukee area and focusing more outstate, which is a complaint we've heard for at least 4 years from outstate Republican lawmakers especially, of why is it all going down there when I have this project in my backyard? So Walker seems to be trying to shift the attention to we're going to focus on locals if he's reelected.
Well, okay, JR, just 2 points. Number one, didn't the governor say at the end of this month, which, excuse me, is Sunday, correct, he was going to offer his thoughts on long-term funding? You think that may not come until October?
We're going to get pieces. It looks like this was one piece about the counties. There are also, by the way, municipalities who get aid to take care of local roads. What's going to happen with that? He has said, again, that he will not sign a gas tax increase without a corresponding offset somewhere else. And he's trying to hammer Tony Evers about what he would do the gas tax.
So he is promising counties this cash of money, $57 million, no small amount. And he's not saying what his long-term funding plan is for highways yet either, correct?
No, the full Department of Transportation proposal will not be out until after the election. So they gave us the administrative piece of the budget by the December 17th deadline. That's tradition, though, that we don't get the DOT, the full thing from DOT until November because we're waiting on the feds to kind of finalize what they're going to give us.
Right.
It's a big piece of what's going to happen. So we won't see that full plan, I don't think, until mid-November.
Well, staying on the issue because it is so important and such gridlock in the Capitol. Are you surprised then that Mr. Evers said I'm going to come out with a long-term funding plan on Inauguration Day in January. And he told us in the clip it's going to have bipartisan support. Everybody's going to be in there singing its praises, hallelujah. But that allows the governor to say what he said last week about Mr. Evers not coming till Inauguration Day. Any Madison bureaucrat that is telling you, wait and trust me until after the election, I wouldn't trust that. Doesn't that give the governor an opening?
Well, it's a double-edged sword for Evers. On the one side, he wants to send a message that he's trying to be bipartisan. He's finding a solution, whereas Walker Republicans, they've been in charge his whole 8 years, have not found one. So there's that piece of it. But other than saying it's a lie, it's crazy, he would never do it, the dollar increase in gas tax, Walker continued to hammer Evers on that issue, saying, well, what is it going to be then? What will your gas tax hike would be? And Evers keeps saying everything's on the table. He wants to appear that he's looking for a big picture solution, not some kind of minuscule thing, but it keeps that door open. You're seeing a change in the tone of Walker's ads.
Yeah.
It was all about the Middleton teacher who viewed porn at work and kept his license, then releasing violent prisoners. The last week and a half or so, it's changed to you can't afford Tony Evers. So now we have a new one out today about Evers will put unions back in charge, quote unquote.
Unions back in charge, yep, that's today's ad.
So we've seen that, the taxes issue. There was this kind of interesting, one way to put it, ad that to take off the electric company skit about pronouncing words and that Evers is going to raise your taxes. It's all about trying to remind voters of, this is what you don't like about Democrats. This is what they'll do if they're in charge. You can't trust them. You can't afford them. You should come stick with me because you know what I'm going
to
do.
Okay, which leads me to topic two here. One reason that Governor Walker can run, he's up to what, 22, 23, 24 ads? With this new one?
23rd today, I think it was.
23rd. Okay, now let's talk about the campaign finance part of it. Nobody follows campaign finance better than you guys. It was politics. So let's look at year-to-date. The governor has raised between January 1 and the end of August $8.4 million. Mr. Evers, $2.5 million. Then when you look at August, $2.3 million for the governor, $1.9 million for Evers.
Yep.
And cash on hand, on September 1, the governor, $4.2 million, which is $2.6 million more than Mr. Evers. But we have to say that Tony Evers spent most of what he raised to win that primary on August 14th, correct?
Yeah. There, got to do a couple things about these numbers, to pull back the onion, if you will. One, for Walker, yes, he outraised Tony Evers, but he did it because Rebecca Clayfish, lieutenant governor, gave him a $1 million transfer.
Thanks.
Republicans rewrote campaign finance
laws. That was in August, right?
Republicans rewrote campaign finance laws in 2015 to allow unlimited transfers between committees, parties to committees, legislative campaign committees, and between candidates. That allowed Clayfish to do the $1 million transfer. That wasn't allowed under the old law.
Yeah.
That gave Walker the edge. Now, with Evers, you have to dive deep and go, okay, I went and looked, and the vast majority of the money that he raised in August came after the primary. There was Democratic money that was pent up because there wasn't a clear who was going to win. Although Evers was a favorite, kind of going to the primary, there people were on the sidelines waiting for a winner to emerge. Once that winner emerged, that money was a flush. We saw six donations from unions of $86,000, which is the maximum they can give. So you saw that money moving to Evers. So it's good for Evers, he got that money, but he's still at a disadvantage to Walker as Walker's more cash on hand. Now, the outside groups are coming to play. We've seen stuff from the DGA, the RGA, Americans for Prosperity, others getting involved. What's a problem for Walker is that though he has the money advantage, it's not moving people. We saw a new poll this week. Now, it's Ipsos, University of Virginia, and somebody else, I think Reuters. It had Evers up 50-43. The caveat I offer about that is it was from an online panel, like the Marquette poll that we kind of use the gold standard in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
These live calls to landlines and cell phones. That gives you a randomly picked sample. This one's a sample. They have people online that they have, and they kind of pull them, and they wait the results to match the electorate. So there's that caveat to it. But I have not seen a public release poll now, and in more than a month, 6 weeks, that has Walker with a significant lead over Tony Evers. We've seen independents be stubbornly upside down, or Walker be upside down with independents. The money's not moving them. So the question I have is, this new line of attack about taxes, does that start to push people in a direction or improve things for Walker?
Well, almost 2 weeks ago when I covered the governor at the at an Oshkosh campaign rally, he said, look, those polls are right. And mm-hmm. he again said that in the last few days.
In a fundraising email.
Right. But here's my question. in the final five weeks plus a few days, will the third-party outside groups be roughly equal, do you think, for the governor and Tony Evers?
Good question. From the numbers I've seen so far, Republicans have a significant advantage. So got to watch that. I think you have to watch the national environment. Now, I think it's going to be a little while before you figure out the Kavanaugh nomination and confirmation hearing and whatever happens with the vote in the Senate, how that all settles and who's at push, who does it inspire, whatever's going on. But going into that whole process, things are not looking good for Republicans nationally. You have President Trump's numbers are not looking good. You have a Democratic base that's energized. You have suburban women who are not real big fans of the Republican Party in general right now. Mm-hmm. So how does this hearing, how does that impact
Which
that?
Is going on, the vote's going on right now. They haven't voted yet. Excuse me.
Is that going to help the Republican Party with women? Is it the spectacle that we watched in Washington, D.C. going to turn people off to the attacks from Democrats? Is it going to turn them off from what they saw from Republicans? I don't know. But nationally, you're seeing an environment that could be looking like a very good one for Democrats.
Well, okay, and now let's turn the page. Thank you for the transition to our next topic. Were you surprised at the very hard line that Leah Vukmir took pro-Judge Kavanaugh, saying Senate Democrats should stop political posturing? We now have additional uncorroborated attacks on Judge Kavanaugh being irresponsibly published by the fake news media. She really dug deep, and this committee is about to vote. We don't know the outcome, but they're going to be voting soon. Were you surprised that she dug in that deep on Kavanaugh?
One argument that I heard this week was that if you look at the Marquette poll, she was at like 87% with Republicans, self-identified Republicans. That's not where you want to be. You want to be in the 90s. So there might be a base issue. Is it because people, Republican voters, are still not quite there after the primary? She had Kevin Nicholson. Are they not excited in general? Like, what's going on? Because you look at the, depending on what poll you look at, she was at 39% in the Ipsos poll.
Yes. Ipsos Reuters had Baldwin 52 and Vukmir 39, correct?
If you look at like the Marquette poll last week, she was at 41 or 42, whatever it was. Yeah. That's kind of like just below base number. You need to get up. So it could be about rallying the base. It could be about generating attention. The same thing we've talked about for a while that's been going on, the attention is still on these like 7 or 8, 9 states ahead of us. You know, I mean, we only 9th or 10th, depending on what, you know, list you want to look at for the most competitive races, but we're not getting the attention. Now, I just saw yesterday, I got the first notice that a group that was funded largely by Dick Uihlein is doing a digital ad attacking Tammy Baldwin. I think there's another one coming out from America's PAC. So
Uihlein backed Nicholson. Excuse me. That's
so the
context
there. So you're seeing some money come in. The Super PAC backing Vukmir did $600K in TV ads and $100K in digital ads. So there's stuff happening. But from what I can see so far, Baldwin's had the upper hand in terms of like spending out of her own pocket because she has a significant financial advantage over Vukmir.
Okay, and you just said she's got the upper hand. She's playing offense on the Kavanaugh appointment by mm-hmm. saying, I still don't understand why the White House has refused to reopen the background investigation, but now that there are more allegations, it seems like the call should be stronger than ever to reopen that. Whenever there's a full Senate vote, she's against it, so she is, as you said, got the upper hand on the Kavanaugh issue?
I don't know about on the Kavanaugh issue. Spending, she has upper hand on spending. With the Kavanaugh issue, I've asked people about this. You know, there was this perception going in on the Supreme Court nomination that red state Democrats or Trump state Democrats would be under pressure to support the president's nomination because he won their states. I've never gotten the sense that that was the same thing applied for Wisconsin, because you have a state where Trump won by 23,000 votes with a plurality, and he's been upside down in the polls consistently. His numbers are not good in Wisconsin. I don't see the pressure from talking to people on Baldwin's support. Now, the Vukmir campaign wants to make the issue or the argument that Baldwin didn't do her job. That's more about a little bit of a processy thing about should have met with him first before
Judge
making
Kavanaugh.
Up her mind, these things. But within a couple, 3 days of the announcement of the nomination, she said she was a no. I just don't sense that there's the pressure on Baldwin to vote yes, unlike some other places. And especially what we saw this week with this process. Again, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I don't get the sense that, you know, Democrats feel like pressured all of a sudden. They have a lot of outs on this. Well, there's this allegation. Why wasn't there an FBI? Why didn't the FBI come back in and do another background? Why wasn't this done? Why don't we delay things? There are so many outs right now for Democrats to say, well, I'm voting no because of this.
And news organizations have been trying to nail down the vote by our other senator, Ron Johnson. And he, I think he issued a carefully issued statement last night saying, I think Dr. Ford, do you remember what Ron Johnson said?
Not exactly. I hate to paraphrase it, but I don't think he's expecting it to be a no vote when it comes to push comes to shove.
I understand. Meanwhile, this week in the Capitol, the Journal Sentinel reported something that caught all of us, I think, by surprise. The allegations that Republican Representative Robert Brooks of Saukville, an assistant Assembly Majority Leader, had made comments after a caucus, an Assembly GOP caucus in the Dells in July, number one, offered to buy drinks for everyone except, quote, Hispanic, close quote, Representative Jesse Rodriguez, after that party caucus, and then had made offensive comments to two other Assembly females. And let's not name them because we don't know firsthand. The governor then tweeted, comments are offensive and disrespectful. They are inconsistent with the high standards of those in public office. He should resign. Democrats immediately said, Governor, you were quick to call on a member of your party to resign. Where are you on being seriously concerned asking President Trump to withdraw the Judge Kavanaugh nomination?
And the response from the governor's office has been that that's a federal issue, essentially.
Yeah, okay. And then Representative Brooks, I regret that I made some stupid comments while under the influence of alcohol. I take full responsibility for my actions and have apologized. I talked to a veteran Assembly Republican yesterday, and this lawmaker said that the whole caucus was surprised given the leadership position of Representative Brooks. But he's not going to resign, right? He's up for re-election on November 6th.
No. I talked to him after the story broke, and he said that he is going to resign leadership position to go focus on his district. Now, in the Capitol, there are always conspiracy theories, right? Anytime something like this happens. One, why is it coming up now?
Yep.
This thing
happened in July.
I had heard some rumors a few weeks ago that, you know, he was obnoxious and drunk in the Dells, but not to this, not like this level of stuff. I hadn't quite picked up this level of detail. Why is it popping now? Also, why is Governor Walker coming out so hard on him to resign?
Immediately calling for him to resign.
There's a thought that, well, think about it, the climate that we're in with the Kavanaugh thing going on, with the Me Too movement, with the struggle of Republicans with suburban women, this is something that, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for Governor Walker to look like he's taking a stand. Now, there are also people who can say, look, he just thinks it's right. You know, it's just, you shouldn't be an officer doing stuff like this. But there's that question. And oh, by the way, Rob Brooks is not exactly the same page sometimes with Robin Voss as part of the leadership team.
Okay.
So now you have not really a rival to Voss, but somebody who was kind of a voice for those who weren't real thrilled with Robin Voss' leadership style that has been kind of like pushed the back bench because of all this.
Yeah. Why?
But the bottom line is that, you know, one, alcohol was involved, which is often involved in these off-site caucuses overnight, and he said stuff he shouldn't have. So he's got to pay a price. I mean, that's the bottom line in politics. He put his foot in his mouth, and he's going to pay a price for it.
Right. And before we go to stock picks, the governor was able to announce that Komatsu Mining has got a new facility and manufacturing plant in the Harbor District in Milwaukee. He scores that, and it's an investment of $285 million, 400 new jobs. So here we go. This is part of the 2010 pledge. I'm going to create 250,000, but we'll get into that later. Stock picks.
So rising, Stephanie Bloomingdale. So first woman to lead the AFL-CIO in Wisconsin, elected this week without opposition. Had been Secretary Treasurer for 8 years, I believe. Replaces Phil Neuenfeld, who had the president's post for 8 years as well. She's coming at a time when unions are trying to rebound from what happened with Act 10, prevailing wage, right to work. The roles have been decimated. There are a little bit of a bump up in 2017 versus 16. The question becomes, what can you guys do now? Organized labor senses there's an opportunity here with Democrats feeling good that they could make some gains on their issues with the Senate and the governor's office if Tony Evers wins. To be quite honest, the assembly is pretty much out of reach for Democrats right now because of the margin, the map, those kinds of things. But if you get a Tony Evers as governor or you get a Democratic Senate, you can be sure there won't be any more restrictions, you know, coming down the pipe.
Yep.
The challenge is, you know, Act 10 has been a rallying cry for organized labor for a while. They don't like that. But I don't get the sense that Democrats want to run on Act 10 every election. They need that energy from the people who don't like Act 10 without saying, we're going to fight Act 10 all over again because that fight's been had.
Right.
So they're going to talk more about attacks on working folks, attacks on the middle class, that these are things that are not good for them. And then, you know, Evers even said that, you know, there might be a way to reverse, for example, the repeal of prevailing wage. But repealing Act 10 anytime soon, probably not going to happen.
Right. Oh, Stephanie Bloomingdale is a good call. And for that reason, an hour and a half ago, I sent her an email saying, hey, congratulations, you ought to sit down for Newsmakers interviews. Stephanie, I hope you say yes. Mixed.
So self-funders, we oftentimes in politics see people who got financial means drop a big check up front in the campaign. And in doing that, you know, there's a couple of things. You want to show strength, personal commitment,
yep.
and you also hope that that check that you write
putting
is followed
by money where my mouth is.
Other yep. checks. What we're seeing, though, especially in the governor's race, is people putting a bunch of money in and then taking it back out. Kelda Royce, I mean, she put about $355,000 in her campaign and all said and done.
Proceeds from a second mortgage?
One of them was right after a second mortgage of like $250,000. Now, we saw in the latest report she repaid herself about $180,000, so a little more than half of what she put in. And there was a big question going into the race. When push came to shove, the final days, would Kelda spend that money off that second mortgage? Because that's real money. That's real skin
that's
in the game.
Money, yeah.
And obviously, I mean, she still spent a lot of her own personal money in running. Matt Flynn put in $140,000. The day before the primary, took $100,000 back out of his campaign to repay himself. Now, others, I mean, like Dana Walks, he's not repaid himself the $250,000 and so that he put in, $70,000 he put in.
Mr. Those kinds of
things. So added some stuff there. But the point is that, you know, there's this risk when you self-fund. One, you get people who might go, well, if they can write that check, they can fund the entire thing, right? Or it can be an easy excuse. I don't like that candidate that much, and he or she put that check in, so I'm just going to say I don't think you need my money. But you also, it spends the same. It gives you a boost, you know, especially judicial campaigns. I mean, like, you know, it's hard to raise money for those things.
Yes.
But there's this risk of it. You know, what do you do in the end? If you're right down, do you pull the trigger? If it's really close, and you might get there, but you might not. Do you pull that trigger? And it's a difficult decision for people.
Yeah, that's a good call. Falling.
It's the Milwaukee County GOP. Like, you know.
Oh, that offensive tweet? Go ahead.
Yes. And honestly, the Juneau County, or Jackson County GOP, I think it was, one of the other county GOPs also tweeted this, but didn't get as much attention. But this one, it's, you know, look, in this environment, you know, and what's going on, this doesn't help. I talked to a Republican, you know, this whole background is there's this kind of meme out there of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, longtime Supreme Court Justice, and this, you know, line across that Abraham Lincoln grabbed her blank in 1862. Mm-hmm. And Democrats think you're making light of sexual assault and sexual harassment. Now, I'm not going to be a judge of good taste or not, but in this environment, what's going on, the Me Too movement, struggles of the Republican Party with suburban women, this doesn't help. And I talked to one Republican and said, you know, it's like 2006. You had a Democratic base jazzed up over the Iraq War already, and it was like Foley, Abramoff. There's like one thing after another. You just could not get out of your own way sometimes and get these things aside to focus on reminding people like what you're good at. And for Democrats, you're like, look, they're putting stuff going, this is how the base of this party thinks about you, women. This is their message. What's it say to you? It just was not well thought out, well timed, or bright in any way, shape, or form.
You know what? Those are three good calls. Attaboy.
Thanks.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 2-8.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.